you. Good morning, Chair, Honorable Chair, and members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to make submissions this morning. The Citrus Growers Association appreciate this opportunity. We unfortunately couldn't be part of all the proceedings yesterday, which we regret. We just could not be involved. So coming in slightly unaware of what the discussions were yesterday, but are grateful just to make some submissions today. Thank you. The intention of my presentation, and maybe I can just ask the coordinator of the meeting if I can share my screen or if the presentation will be shared from your side. I just can't share my screen. Okay, there we go. I can see it. And I'm going to open that up like that. And I'm assuming you can see that as well. My name is Paul Hardman. I'm the Industry Affairs Manager working at Citrus Growers Association. And again, as I said, we appreciate the opportunity to make oral submissions today, which was obviously followed by our written submissions in April 2021. Just my intention for the presentation today is not so much to go into the detail that we went through in our oral, I'm sorry, written submission, but rather just to provide a bit more context in which those comments were made. So I'll just start a little bit with what about the CGA and then provide some information about the global context in which citrus producers find themselves at the moment and how that impacts on the amendment bill and how we see it might play out. So that's my intention, and I'll proceed just straight through that. Just a little bit about the CGA itself. We represent all growers that export citrus. There's approximately 1,400. CGA itself is not a commercial entity. We don't get involved in the trading of citrus, so we are not agents. But what we do on behalf of growers is to try and create an environment for the successful production and trade of citrus. That is our intention. And our specific objective as an organization is to ensure the long-term competitiveness of the South African citrus industry, and particularly growers. And we paid on a statutory levy, so every carton that's exported out of South Africa attracts a levy. And that levy is used on some key focus areas, mostly market access, the ability to gain new markets, to be able to sell citrus in new markets, retain those markets. So we spend a great effort in retaining the existing markets that we have, and then optimizing in the markets as well. So those markets that we're able to supply through to, we try to change the conditions in which we can access those markets. This is largely done through the second focus area of research, and we have a large research team that supports the market access objectives. We see transformation as critical for our industry as well, so we've got a major focus on transformation. And what has emerged as a fourth key focus area in the last number of years is just logistics and the impact. So I just apologize. I'm working from home here because of a better connection, which means we might hear some dogs in the background, unfortunately. Sorry. Just in terms of just a reminder in terms of the context, South Africa is the second largest exporter of citrus in the world, so a major player. Quite importantly, we've been exporting for about 110 years. So a lot of the trading is well established and have relationships and trading partners have been developed over many, many years and quite mature at this stage. Obviously, the markets we supply are quite fortunate within the citrus industry, and we appreciate the efforts from Delrad in opening up new markets that we can supply a range of markets across the globe in the Northern Hemisphere, and that helps us remain competitive and viable. Accessing these markets is really the key. We have to maintain has quite a sanitary compliance, and as I said, a lot of effort and research goes into making sure we gain and retain those markets. The markets have been developed over time with particular practices, some of which are just inherent in the characteristics of those markets. For example, we observe that some markets would be shipping in a certain way, and that's a historic development. They, for whatever reason, they prefer to do their shipping or rely on us to ensure the product arrives there, and that becomes our responsibility. So we notice, for example, different arrangements in markets, and particularly also the different types of selling, you know, whether it's free on board or delivered in port. So there's a very wide range of ways exporters and growers interact. So there's approximately 400 exporters of citrus, and that obviously means that it's, you know, if you think 400 exporters and 1,400 growers, multiple relationships across, you know, multiple regions and into multiple markets. What we have observed over time is also that more growers are becoming exporters themselves. So they export their own product. And then also over time, some exporters have also become producers. So they actually produce the fruit they sell. Just a quick slide on the current context, because it feeds into the comments I was, I'm going to make in terms of the amendment bill. But there's some immediate challenges, even in this season, which are impacting on the global context for citrus and citrus supply.
You've got 10 minutes remaining.
Thank you. Okay, just in terms of growth, we're on a massive growth curve, so we need new markets, and agents are going to have to be active in being able to sell fruit. Things like the flooding in Durban, the throughput of Durban port and other ports is really affecting our logistics and ability to actually supply markets. There's the shipping arrangements across the globe are really out of sync as well. And where this comes into play, as I mentioned just now, is you need to be dynamic and flexible in your supply chains. And logistics is having a massive impact and needing to be flexible. Things like the Russian-Ukraine conflict, basically that means about 30 to 35 ships of fruit need to find a different home. And this has been an immediate impact. You know, it's something that's happened in very short term, again, emphasizing the flexibility required. And then obviously we have the challenges with market access in the EU around citrus black spot and false codling moth, also a very dynamic situation at the moment and requires agents to be very nimble and flexible. Okay, just then coming on specifically to some comments around the amendment bill in the context that I've provided. CJ welcomes and supports the promulgation of legislation which effectively regulates product produce agents and provides sufficient protection to producers. I think the critical thing, however, is that the bill needs to promote transparency and not be over-regulating. We are concerned that over-regulation will in fact hinder trade. So on the specific concerns we have around the bill as it is, the regulations need to take into account the different arrangements that apply in markets. I've emphasized that. There are some specific concerns, for example, where some markets you can't get credit insurance that is simply not available. These are the types of realities that we face, and we're not going to be able to change them. So the bill needs to take those into account. Also, the practical arrangements should be provision made for where producers are exporting their own fruit, and that we don't see in the bill at the moment. We believe that exemptions should apply in this case. In terms of regulation, the regulation should not create barriers to entry. What we are concerned about is, as the bill stands, there are likely to be higher costs for agents, which will simply be passed back to the growers. And if agents themselves can't bear that cost, it just becomes a barrier for new entrants into that space as well. And we believe that competition is important amongst exporters and agents to improve service delivery and performance. So what are the implications of over-regulation? Basically, the costs do get pushed back to the producers, so this will have a direct impact on our producers. We believe there's going to be missed market opportunities. As I said, the Russian-Ukraine type scenario or the logistics problems happen so quickly, the Durban floods, you know, within days you've got to make alternative arrangements. And we don't see how that flexibility is currently catered for in the bill. And we believe over-regulation or too much stipulation in the bill will prevent that flexibility. The citrus industry has been developed on people taking chances and developing markets, you know, at risk. And if had they not done this, there would have been no development of some of the markets that we currently enjoy today. So there's a concern that if over-regulation prevents agents from taking any risks, that market development will also be impacted. Obviously, we're in a global space, and if we become too prescriptive in South Africa, we will run into conflicts with our trading partners and their requirements, and also then just the nature of the deals at the very commercial level will be impacted. So we believe some responsibilities in some parts of the trade will be moved offshore, and this will be a negative for South Africans. Because, you know, just to avoid the regulation here in South Africa, people would prefer to do business from elsewhere, even though they would be buying and contracting specifically from South Africa. Mr. Chair, we have got some more specific inputs and concerns which are listed in our written submissions. I've got them highlighted here just as headings, but I think it will be best explained in the submission itself, the written submission, where the particular terms and definitions and arguments for and against are covered in greater detail. But I trust I've been able to provide a sense of the context in which this amendment bill needs to be considered. And as we pointed out, what we're trying to create is a transparent space where producers are protected, but we must be a practical and flexible solution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Paul Hartman, for the presentation of the Citrus Growers Association of South Africa. Honorable members, we will take our second presentation, which will be from the Fresh World. And I'd like to invite Mr. Adolf Kivit to please take the platform. We will then take questions and comments immediately after the presentation of Fresh World. Dr. Adolf Kivit, you may proceed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman, to the Portfolio Committee. Can everyone hear me well enough?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. Proceed.
Good. Can I please ask permission to share my screen? At the moment, I seem to not be able to. There we go. Thank you very much for the opportunity today. The fruit export business is very dear to my heart. It is a very vibrant, passionate industry, and it gives it's the reason why we don't wake up in the morning. You jump up when you wake up. I think it's changing ever more. So what is the purpose of my presentation today? I represent Fresh World. We're an exporter. I want to give you some background about our business, what the role of an exporter is, and then how the proposed bill will directly affect our business going forward if it is accepted in the way it is proposed. So Fresh have exported and sold fresh produce for over 21 years. We have a combined experience in our office of about 234 years of experience in the fresh export industry. We sell 29 types of fresh produce into 49 countries across the globe. Our drive is to, we have a farmer first philosophy, and we really have the producer at heart. These are just some of the countries that we export fresh produce to. Services that we do over and above it, we provide growers with technical assistance, be it pesticides, planting, what varieties to do, when to pick, maturity testing. We have area representatives across South Africa assisting growers in packing and picking. The technology backup that we have a logistics system that will ensure that the growers have full traceability and sight of their product throughout our logistics system. We have financial services board accredited, which means that we do our payments and reporting accurately and on a weekly basis to our producers. But what is the role of an exporter? Now, there's a lot of different world events that impact our business. For example, the Shanghai lockdown currently has meant that we are not able to ship any fruit to Shanghai. We've had to divert fruit that was en route to China to other ports. Our customers there, for example, have been in lockdown in their own apartments for almost 4 weeks. Russia, we've had to find additional or alternative markets for some of our big pears that we export, as well as big grapefruit that usually takes Russia usually takes a lot of. So we also need to be aware that our trading partners are in different time zones. They speak different languages. They trade in different foreign currencies. So what does an exporter do? We link the producer and the consumer. We try to make sense of all the noise, and we try to facilitate any transaction that is available. Yes, we are a commercial entity, but we always have the grower at heart. If there's no producers in South Africa and they are not profitable, then we do not have a business. So what will be the additional administrative burden of the proposed bill? The current additional audit requirements, as written in the proposed bill, is not required by the Companies Act. There's additional trust accounts that the bill proposes. In official, from our point of view, that will mean that we will have to open an additional 69 trust accounts because you will have to do it per producer, per foreign currency that you send that producer's fruit to, which is just not feasible. There's additional requirements on registering of directors for APAC, background checks, police clearance, etc. And this may prohibit non-executive producers directors to participate in the fresh produce export industry. We all feel that non-executive directors play a very big role in assisting companies and to provide guidance. Also, there's additional costly examinations per company. What will be the loss of market access to due to the proposed bill? And this is directly linked to Freshworld, our company. The requirements of credit insurance will exclude our company of supplying fruit into any African country, Russia, the Ukraine, India, and Bangladesh. And this is close to 30% of our business. Credit insurance is not available or is expensive for shipments to these countries. And this will affect all producers from South Africa. The requirements of marine insurance will add an additional transaction cost of at least 1% into our chain. This will make us as a country less competitive in the global market. Here we already compete with countries that have free trade agreements in place. Additional disadvantages to exporters due to the proposed bill. This bill doesn't differentiate between exporters and producers that export themselves, as was previously mentioned by Paul Hartman from the CGA. This implies that the exporter will incur additional costs to comply and that producer exporters will be exempt from the legislation. This will not level the playing field at all. The proposed Fidelity Fund contribution will place another burden on exporters. Currently, South African exporters are not subsidized by government. In fact, most of the trade shows and export-related marketing activities are self-funded by voluntary organizations like the FBEF, of which we are a member. We do have some recommendations. We recommend that the bill be revised or a new bill drafted to specifically make provision for fresh produce exports that operate in a very complex environment. The original bill is based on legislation from 1992. This preempts the deregulation of the fresh produce export sector in 1996. We have to review the current definition of an agent, as the current definition is not representative of the fresh produce export environment. And we propose that we rely on current structures already in place, be it the FBEF, Fruit South Africa, or the grower organization, to self-regulate and provide guidance to government on matters relating to export of fresh produce. Thank you very much. That was my submission.
Thank you, Dr. Adolf Kivit, for the presentation of Fresh World. Honorable members, you have both the presentation of the Citrus Growers Association of South Africa, as well as that of Fresh World. We'll now open the sessions for questions of clarity on the presentations that have been put before the Portfolio Committee on Agricultural and Reform and Rural Development. And I will ask our presenters to note the questions of the honorable members as they pose the questions, and then we will afford them time to respond to the questions once the honorable members have had a chance to ask questions of clarity or even comments. Honorable members, we'll now open the floor for questions of clarity. Honorable Kapa.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. At the moment, I was just having one simple question, but I'll come later with the last one of Mr. Adolf Kivit, when he was talking about the bill redrafted or another bill being implemented or setting another bill altogether. I would like just some clarity there, that what would be the difference between the two, or whether which one is better between the two, and whether he thinks it is extreme, so that it must be somehow repealed and another bill is done. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kapa. The Honorable Mamum Babama.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I must say thank you to the two gentlemen who have just given us their presentations. I must say, listening to yesterday's presentations and today's as well, one is getting a lot of insights into the business of exporting fresh produce in South Africa. And I must say, there are quite a number of challenges as I see. And yes, very interesting presentations. Thank you very much. I don't have questions as such, Chair, because I feel that the presentations were very concise, very informative, and really for us, our duty here is to ask clarity, questions of clarity, and I don't have any questions of clarity. However, I can say that from yesterday's presentations through to today, there are certain themes that are coming through in terms of recommendations for this bill. One of them, as Honorable Kapa has said, being the recommendation that you know, there is a new bill altogether instead of the department trying to, I don't want to say copy-paste, but trying to rehash the old bill to fit what is here. And I think from the presentations that we are getting, it will be very easy for us, when I say us, I mean the department and ourselves on oversight, to be able to incorporate all of the recommendations going forward. So I think our content advisors are getting the themes. And I've noticed that from the presentations yesterday and today, the recommendations are similar. So as far as I'm concerned, I feel that there is substance in what the people are saying, from the very fact that different organizations are coming up with sort of similar recommendations for the bill going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mbabama. Dr. Matias. Honorable Dr. Matias. Dr. Matias. Honorable Marshall.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, members on the platform and also our presenters. One would like to welcome the presentation as made by our presenters. They were well informative to us. The issue here, Chairperson, which one will also like to add on what the Honorable Appa said, is that on the issue of the bill being not accepted, and what I just wanted to check as to, from our content advisor, what are going to be the most important issues that need us to check and which will need us to intervene on. And I think our department should indeed make sure that we become aware of those loopholes that are there on the bill so that we can be able to help our Section 9 institutions to be able to do their work in making sure that they provide the quality work that will make our economy to grow in the country. That is the only thing that I wanted to add on. It's not a question really, but I wanted to add on what Honorable Kapa and Honorable Babama said. Chairperson, so far, I don't have more questions. Most of the things that were presented were clear to me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Memaso. Then we have Honorable Ntate Masipa.
Thank you, Chair. And also thank you to the presenters, the ACG, GCA, Citrus Grower Association, CGA, yeah, and the fresh Mr. Kevin. The Chair, I think the first request from my side, just for clarity, if CGA can just help us in terms of maybe, you know, helping us with the detailed comments maybe regarding where they have got issues. I think the last slide of their presentation was very important. And maybe, you know, if they can just really clarify, you know, the point number one, obviously the definition of export, which they've got an issue with. Obviously the definition of fresh produce and so forth, so that we can really have a much better understanding when we go in to deliberate, you know, in terms of this. But I know that they might have really put them in the detailed presentation, but if, you know, the gentleman can just assist us in terms of really just making sure that, you know, give us really the highlights of these issues that they have got with regards to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 points that they have made with the detailed comments. The second part that I just want to know is Mr. Kivett indicated that, you know, obviously in the export environment, it's a very complex environment. Being a complex environment, what has been the engagement between the industry, APEC, and the department regarding this particular bill before it was presented to Parliament? Because I think the complex nature of this environment would have required some kind of engagement between the players before a bill like this is presented before Parliament for consideration. I just want to get a feel there as to what were the kind of engagements, what were the kind of inputs that took place amongst the role players before the, call it the draft bill, was put together. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ntate Masipa.
Dankie, voorzitter. Chairperson, I'm goed en self.
Ek is goed.
Sorry about condolences regarding the passing of your cousin, Chairperson. I think that is really sad, and please travel safely. I know the Eastern Cape's roads are almost as bad as the Free States. Chairperson, I think I have been covered to a large extent. I actually wanted to ask the same as Honourable Masipa yesterday from APAC and FPF. We actually heard that there was not sufficient stakeholder engagement when this bill was actually, you know, planned and drafted by the department, and that it was too late, you know, they weren't involved in the process. So I think that is very important, Chairperson. And I think that's also going forward with the other inputs we will be receiving, to actually be cognizant of that and to request that they actually inform us whether they were involved in the drafting stage, because as APAC said, it's the legislation governing them that they have an input in terms of regulating this area, specifically taking exports into account, and then what goes into that, Chairperson. So no, I would just like to thank the presenters. I think it was a reiteration of yesterday in terms of the definitions, the audits, the accounts, and the issues that were highlighted, Chair. And then I fear that we as a committee will have a hard task at hand deciding and ensuring that this bill, which is to a large extent the same as the 2012-2013 bill, actually doesn't be passed, you know, without taking the relative stakeholders into account, Chairperson. But other than that question, I have nothing. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and all members, and the presenters, and this gentleman presenting that documents to us at the portfolio committee. I don't think I have any question or comments since they've put their views before us as a committee. Maybe when we sit down and try and thresh out what the differences are with regards to the challenges that they are seeing in the bill, maybe we then be in a position to have a way forward and see if the final approach will be an acceptable one to all those that have been representing their organizations. Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you, Davis Zita. Honorable Constance Abekou. Honorable Emakasi is absent. Honorable Muntwedi. Tate Muntwedi.
I will take his place, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kape. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. And let me also apologize for the delay. I'm having issues with my network, the site. Chair, let me also welcome the presentation of the two organizations. And for the same sentiment as my colleagues, that their issues are the same. Just one question, Chair, for both of them. Are you affiliated to the yesterday the forum for exporters that was here presenting yesterday? Because I heard Fresh World at the end saying something like that, that affiliates of FPEF. The reason why I'm asking, Chair, I'm trying to check if this forum and the organizations under them have discussed this, because it's almost the same thing. And this will help us, Chair, also in determining the number of submissions that we have, that at least organizations under the umbrella of FPEF has been able to do this oral presentation. My last question, Chair, as it was explained, the purpose of this bill is to protect farmers, promote market access, ensure level playing field for agents. And these are the contestation from all the presentations since yesterday, the submissions. I failed also even today to locate the interest of farmers. Can the two organizations indicate, besides the challenges that they will have of auditing that has to be there, paying fidelity of insurances requirements, where do we locate protection of farmers in your submissions? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kabe. Honorable members, is there any other honorable member on the platform who hasn't posed the question?
Honorable Chair?
Yes. Ntate Matias, I called you earlier and I couldn't pick you up. Please proceed.
Well, thank you so much and greetings to you and to colleagues and the presenters. Our deepest condolences to you for the loss of your cousin and to a former Secretary General, Gertrude Kasi, for loss of his daughter. The struggle to free humanity from all sorts of problems such as this will continue for as long as gender-based violence ravages our lives, especially the lives of women. We have to stand up against sexism. We have to stand up against femicide and all forms of prejudice against women. We have a dark cloud hanging and hovering over our country, and is the most devastating moment of our lives. Honorable Chair, just as an input to the discussions on the amendment bill, perhaps what I can say is to confirm what Honorable Masipa said, that the bill deals with the most complicated and complex environment, which consists of both domestic and foreign markets,
and the players involved on both sides are of diverse experiences and skills and motives, whose contract from time to time will have to be placed under a radar screen so that we are able to eliminate rogue elements among those. And I think that's partly what the bill seeks to achieve. And I would like perhaps the presenters to tell us of how do they think that the amendments to the bill seeks to eliminate rogue elements, to professionalize the sector and ensure that it is clean of such rogue elements. Secondly, is to get their opinion in the relation to the Fidelity Fund and the related insurance. And some of the presenters and people that make presentations through written submissions have mentioned that the Fidelity Fund and insurance related to it, should it be introduced, would make the life and the work of growers and farmers of citrus fruit very difficult, in that it transfers responsibility for insurances that ought to be paid to the growers and farmers. What is the take of the presenters in relation to Fidelity Fund and insurance? Thank you so much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Matthias. Any other honorable member who may wish to pose a question? If not, honorable members, let me therefore invite our presenters to proceed in terms of covering the questions and giving responses back. So I'll invite our first presenter from the Citrus Growers Association of South Africa, Dr. Paul Hartman. Hartman, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'll do then is respond initially to the question by Honourable Mustafa on some of the specifics on one of the slides there. I don't know if you want me to share my presentation again just on that slide, but I'll just talk you through the main points. In Section 1, we had a definition of an export agent. Here we were concerned about the fact that, again, it feeds into this idea that export agents supply a range of different services. Sometimes, as we heard from Freshworld, have technical services. They provide additional support to growers. In other cases, agents might just simply be the buyer and seller of the fruit, offering no additional services. We have then also the complication of whether they're involved on the shipping side, documentation work, etc. So when we're talking about the definition of an export agent, I think within the bill, those considerations need to be considered so that we come up with a clear definition of an export agent and what that would mean for the different types of roles they could play. That just needs to be taken care of in the definition. On the second point, the definition of a fresh produce agent, here it mainly is dealing with the fact that we need to distinguish the differences between perhaps a local agent, someone supplying fruit to the local fresh market, and someone who's an export agent. So what we're recommending is perhaps changing the definition here, and rather refer to a local market agent rather than a fresh produce agent. And I think this is what we are dealing with here is a symptom of what one of the honourable members indicated. We've perhaps taken an old bill and tried to rework it into fitting the export scenario or situation, and that's not an easy fit. We need to start with looking at what the export situation is like and then appropriately write the bills to account for that. In terms of payouts of the from the fund, we did have some specific points to make there, particularly how that would happen. That the bill refers to publication of a notice, and we do see some challenges with that. Particularly, how do we expect stakeholders, producers, to be monitoring the various media platforms, etc., where such notices would need to be made concerning the claims on the Fidelity Fund. So we do see some specific challenges around that. On the proposed amendment to Section 16, which is regarding the prohibition on acting as agents under circumstances, here the concern is that when a claim is raised, and that immediately then ties the hands of the export agents. And because we're dealing with a perishable product, you might then limit the agent's ability to actually deal with that product while it's in the supply chain, which will have a detrimental effect on the ability to sell that fruit, and therefore directly impact the producer in terms of their returns for that particular consignment of fruit. So the proposal there is to create some flexibility that fruit in the system at least can be dealt with while the claim is taking place. When we go to section 17A, just in terms of insurance by the export
recording agent, in progress.
I think these issues have been largely dealt with in the submissions so far. There are just simply cases where insurance is not going to be available from certain markets and countries. That's just the nature of the business. And it also raises particularly some instances where because you can't double insure, it's illegal to insure the same fruit twice. There will be instances where that significantly reduces the flexibility for a producer to actually then select which agent they want to deal with. So it comes down to producer choice. They will be limited in their choice of which agent they can use, simply because the first agent that acquires the insurance is the only agent that can acquire the insurance. So there's a complication there, and we propose that. Again, the insurance aspect is problematic for some markets and should be perhaps excluded from the bill. The proposed amendment on Section 18 regarding accounts, again, I think the point made by Freshworld applies. Obviously, there's additional fees. So, and that's because of the multiple accounts that would need to be created. And then we do raise a specific point about the definition of an auditor. What does that mean? And is it a full audit in terms of your normal accounting practice? Or is it some other form of auditing? Again, some of the businesses themselves are not that large, and the additional fees, et cetera, would create entries to barriers over time. Also taking into account, obviously, the prescripts within the Companies Act there. Again, the same can be said, or similar comments can be made for the trust accounts for export agents. And particularly where the producer has become their own agent, or they'll be selling their own fruit, would they be required to open these trust accounts? And then that is not a sensible or practical arrangement, where you simply are just opening entities just for the sake of legislation, rather than any practical or meaningful protection to that producer themselves. I trust I've covered some of the main points relating to the specific questions there on the amendments. And again, I think the detail is in the written submission, which is best handled, you know, to deal with that. Just a comment on the question on how do we see rogue agents, or how do we clean up and prevent producers being exposed to rogue agents? And this perhaps leads into the other question, which I'll respond to at the same time, is how are the interests of the producer really protected? As we indicated, we do believe the bill is helpful and is a good idea in terms of creating some rules and prescripts for how agents should operate, but those need to be promoting transparency. So what we believe is, for example, agreements being reduced to writing, creating a very clear communication between agents and the producer about what services are being offered under what conditions, etc. These are the types of things that promote the transparency and will help producers identify and select the right agents that they would like to work through. So basically, there's no grey areas or hidden transactions. Of course, it's very difficult to completely identify a completely criminal and rogue agent. But I think what we want to prevent in the bill, or seeing in the bill, is something that is so onerous that it impacts on all agents and becomes trading impossible. That it then does have a knock-on effect in terms of cost and flexibility for the producer. And just in a final sort of response, the CGA has previously indicated that in engaging with the council, we would be keen to perhaps put some work together to work on some guidelines in terms of what a good agent should be doing and under which circumstances they should be operating. So we make that invitation again, and we are happy to perhaps put guidelines together, sitting with the council in terms of what you see are the appropriate tasks and responsibilities of agents that should be taken into account. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Paul Hartman. Can we now have the responses from our presenter from Fresh World, Dr. Adolf Kivitz? You may proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I've tried to write very quickly, so if I miss anything during my answers, then please correct me. I'm sorry, I've got quite a few questions coming my way. I'm not going to start with the first question. I think I want to start with what has been the engagement with between industry and with APAC in this bill. Firstly, the first in 2012, we were advised that there would be an amendment to the bill, and there was workshops attended by the industry. Submissions were made, but that never, none of the submissions that we submitted at the time ever came to fruition. And also the bill then was not passed. There was rules and rules in respect of export agents passed to make provision for the export industry in the current bill. So if you have rules that needs to be applied for you to interpret the bill, then you're saying that the bill is not hasn't kept up with the times, if you may say it like that. When the bill was drafted initially in 1992, all exports from South Africa of fresh produce was managed or was regulated by government. Citrus was all exported by Outspan. All other fruit, deciduous fruit, was exported by Unifruco. In 1996, all the fruit boards were were deregulated and the export industry started, proliferated and started with a big bang. I think prior to 96, South Africa exported only about 40 million cartons of citrus. I may be incorrect. In the past year, we exported 160 million cartons. That meant that the deregulation really opened up more markets for South African product and earning our country much needed foreign exchange. In terms of our engagement with APAC and with Delrat, we have been engaging with them consistently. Previously, I was the chairman of the Fresh Produce Exporters Forum for 5 years. The registrar of APAC was we invited him to our board meetings regularly. He was a board member. We engage with them on a continuous basis, not just from a Fresh Produce Exporters Forum, from grower organizations as well. So the initial indication from APAC was that the bill in its current form got lost somewhere in administrative process, and we were very surprised when the bill in its as it is at the moment was presented to Parliament. In fact, the current registrar, Mr. Francois Knowles, in a meeting between APAC and the Fresh Produce Exporters, admitted as such that the current bill will not be able to implement the current bill. A lot has changed in the industry from 1996. Growers are able to get payment in US dollars, in British pounds, in Canadian dollars, in Japanese yen, Chinese renminbi. This bill does not take that into account. This bill does not take into account the additional things that placed upon us by the Reserve Bank requirements, just the intricacies of foreign trade. If I, for example, pack a carton of citrus this week and I pack it specifically for China, it'll only arrive in that market 6 weeks from today. And that customer will most probably only pay me 30 days after arrival. So that means that we will probably only get paid within 12 weeks of packing that specific carton of fruit. This bill does not take into account long transits, international trade. It was a bill that was prepared for fresh produce markets, fresh produce agents acting on the municipal markets, and then it was rehashed to draw in export agents, which appeared after 1996. Then there was a question about if we are a member of the FPF. Yes, we are a member of the FPF, Fresh Produce Exporters Forum. We're also a member of APAC, which is a requirement by law. I think the role of the FPF was more to give an overall view of what will affect the members. My presentation was more to do how it will affect our business specifically. If that answers the question. And in terms of protection of farmers in our presentations, it was unfortunately not in my presentation. However, Fresh is a member of the FPF, and we have a very strict code of conduct. If there is any disciplinary hearings or disciplinary action needed to be taken by our members or by farmers or growers against our members, then we do that. We are very strict on that. Then the Fidelity Fund was a question about how the Fidelity Fund, if it will make producers' life easier. It's a difficult question from an export point of view. A Fidelity Fund, for example, a container of citrus the delivered value to the customer will probably be about 200,000 rand. Now, if something goes wrong with a specific exporter for a container of fruit, then that Fidelity Fund will need to have enough money to pay that 200,000 rand. In fact, we believe that the Fidelity Fund will never be able to cover that amount needed for a big exporter, because if an exporter is rogue or is something that goes bad, then it will not only be one transaction, it will be a range of transactions. And that Fidelity Fund will not be able to, there will not be enough money to cover that expense or to protect the commercial grower in this case from a claim against an exporter. But saying that, if you are part of the FPF, then you need to adhere to the code of conduct. And with our partners in Fruit South Africa, which is SATI, the Table Growers Association, Ordgrow, CGA, and SIPTROP, we are very close, and we all make sure that, let's call it, we play by the rules. I think in our we self-govern at the moment is very effective, and we've been able to grow the exports from South Africa at an alarming rate over the past 10 years. I'm not sure if there's anything... Honourable Kapa, you asked, should the bill be repealed or a new one done? If we repeal the current one, which is currently the proposed bill at the moment, I think a new one should be done. The current one is a copy paste of a lot of different ideas onto one new bill proposed bill, and it does not take into account the intricacies that South African exporters and South African producers face in exporting to the world. I'm not sure if I've missed any questions. Please help me if I have.
Thank you, Dr. Adolf Kivett. Honorable members, we'll now proceed to our other presentations. If I may ask to get into our next presenters. Let me invite honorable members, Annelise Crosby and Theo Bostoff from Agricultural Business Chamber. You may proceed. Thank you.
Sorry about that, Chairperson, honourable members. Good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And Chairperson, also allow me to express my condolences over the loss of your family member. Chair, our presentation is a brief one. It's not lengthy. And it covers, I think, a lot of ground that has already been covered. But nonetheless, I think it is important, like some of the members indicated, where there are themes that are recurring, I think it is important for the committee to take note of that. So Chairperson, just very briefly, who is ACPIS? Those of you who don't know, ACPIS is a voluntary organization. We believe we're a dynamic and influential association of agribusinesses. We are operating in the country and also broader in Southern Africa. Our key constituents include major banks, as well as development finance institutions, short-term and crop insurance companies, agribusinesses, commodity organizations, and cooperatives. That they are providing a range of services and products to farmers. There are also various other businesses and associations in the food and fiber value chain in the country that are affiliated to ACPIS. Our function is to ensure that agribusiness plays a constructive role in the economic growth of our country, but also in development and transformation, and to create an environment in which agribusinesses of all sizes can thrive, expand and be competitive. Our inputs on the ball are informed by the need to improve on the ease of doing business and also removing barriers to entry. There's just a nice picture, Chairperson, of the value chain, the input providers, the producers, the processors, and the marketing side of things. And this is a list of all the members of ACFIS, which is available if you want to study it in detail. We've got a couple of general comments, Chairperson. First of all, we believe that the optimal functioning of agricultural markets is critical for the growth and welfare of the agricultural sector. We believe that APAC does have a critical role and is a critical institution in the sector. There are a number of our members who deal more directly with APAC. We're a little bit removed, and some of them have also presented, like the FPEF as well as IMASA. So the point, Chair, that we want to raise, firstly, has reference to operational matters. There's in Section 13.3, there is a provision that will reduce the period of the description of claims from 6 months to 3 months. And we just want to point out that we think that 3 months is a very short period of time. Generally, claims prescribe only after 3 years in terms of the Prescription Act. And if you look at the Promotion of Agricultural Justice Act, Administrative Justice Act, the period there is 180 days. So we believe that the 3 months is probably not long enough. Then secondly, the indemnification of APAC against certain claims, Section 13.6b seeks to indemnify APAC against claims where any notification was issued in good faith. We do not believe that this is in line with the general law of delict, where negligence can give rise to a civil claim. So we believe that the words "without negligence" should be added there, so that where there is negligence, that the indemnity will not apply. The Fidelity Fund Certificate, the Act already makes provision for entities operating as fresh produce agents to be in possession of such Fidelity Fund Certificates. The amendment bill now seems to introduce an additional requirement that each director, trustee, or member of such an entity also be in possession of their own Fidelity Fund Certificate. If our reading of this is correct, Chairperson, this will boil down to a duplicate requirement that will lead to additional administration and costs, which will in turn affect competitiveness and raise the barriers to entry. Double regulation may occur where export agents wish to sell produce in the local market, which we also think is not a good thing. Overregulation is not in the interest of transformation or inclusivity, nor does it improve the ease of doing business. So we propose that the requirement be scrapped and replaced with a provision that merely permits the council to perform that an individual is in good standing. Regarding the insurance by export agents and fresh produce agents, the proposed Section 17A2 requires all export agents and fresh produce agents to take out appropriate assurance to reimburse producers for losses suffered for any reason other than theft or dishonesty. This will introduce additional and significant costs, which will in turn raise the barriers to entry, detrimentally affect competitiveness, and there are legitimate concerns as to whether or not this provision is actually implementable. I think this has been raised by some of the previous presenters as well. Products that are sold by marketing agents are typically perishable products, the value of which will diminish over time. It may therefore be a challenge to access insurance as the value of insured interest may change rapidly over a short period of time. So if your fruit has gone down, obviously the value is also then affected negatively. A distinction could be drawn between risks that are attributable to the agent and those that should be assumed by a fresh produce market in mass, by the market in mass, sorry. Where the producer's produce are exposed to risk in mass, for instance, if the entire market burned down or where power is cut to a cold storage unit, the producer's civil claim would be directed at the fresh produce market and not at the agent. from the exporter's point of view, it may not be possible to obtain sufficient insurance cover as products are transported across national boundaries and often exported to markets where no such insurable products are available. We are therefore seriously concerned about creating a legal provision which is not implementable in practice. Even if the provision is able to be implemented, we are concerned that the associated costs will raise the barriers to entry to such an extent that it could kill off competition in the sector. New entrants to the market will be faced with significant financial barriers, effectively preventing inclusivity, transformation, and contributing to market concentration. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. That is, honorable members, the presentation of Agricultural Business Chamber from Mayor Annelise Crosby. We will come back to that in terms of questions and comments. Let me invite, with your permission, a presentation from the South African Fruit Promoters. Mr. Mark Jensen, you may proceed.
Thank you very much. My apologies. I've been traveling the last week and I haven't been able to get a presentation together, but I will speak to the items in hopefully a logical and sequential manner. A little bit of background. We established the company in 1997 at deregulation. This is our 25th year of exporting fruit. And as an exporter, we are now one of the largest exporters in the country. And most of our relationships with our growers date back to the late 1990s/early 2000s and have really been developed on mutually sustainable basis. Give an example, our biggest producer was 100,000 cartons when we started shipping with him he started exporting to us in 1998. And he will do this year about 3.5 million cartons of his own fruit, still exporting 100% of his fruit through us. So we have been committed to the journey of transparent, sustainable exporting, as have many of my other colleagues in the industry. My dad was, in fact, in the early years as a co-founder of the business, one of the original founders of the Fresh Produce Exporters Forum, that we call the FPEF. And that was established at the time specifically because there were rogue elements, as in any new industry. There were rogue elements in the industry. And it was felt that I'd come from an accounting background, a chartered accountant, and we'd started at the very start of the business operating what we called separate trust accounts. So although they were not fully legal trust accounts, they were trust accounts that separated grower proceeds and distributions and incoming payments and outgoing payments from the company's finances. And so with that, together with many other legal, Gabby Guess at the time, legal minds and commercial minds, the FPEF was formed specifically to give credibility to those exporters who wanted to separate themselves from, I suppose, the rogue elements at the time, and to be able to project to the growers at the time that if you want to have a safe environment for exporting, then you should utilize exporters who are members of the FPEF, because in order to be a member, they have to subscribe to a code of conduct. So, really, if we look at it, FPEF now represents probably the majority of the exporters who want to abide by that code of conduct. And I think it's been extremely successful in removing the majority of the rogue elements and from the industry. And I think the industry itself is testament to the success of the FPEF in trying to fulfill that role of professional organization with professional members. I'd also alluded to the growth in the citrus industry. It's four times the size of what it was in volume, in value, it's significantly greater access to many markets, and that is all being built on exporters finding new markets, new channels, new distribution networks into a multitude of countries around the world and channels around the world. And so I think, you know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, is that the industry is actually a professional industry, and by far the majority of those members are in fact abiding by the code of conduct. My dad at the same time was opposed to the inclusion of exporters when this bill went before Parliament in 2003, because again, as we said, the old bill dealt with local markets where you received funds and agents held the funds pending disbursement to producers. In the export market, we've run some numbers over the last week, and I think it is in one of the slides that forwarded to Albertina. I don't know if she's got it there, but it's the one. No, sorry, I can't see it. But we ultimately only become cash flow positive probably on average 10 to 11 weeks after shipping of the fruit. For the first 11 weeks, you're paying growers advances to cover their packing and packaging costs. You're paying the FOB costs for the cold storage, transport. Then you're paying freight in many instances. And many of these customers actually only pay you a deposit to cover a small portion, or they only pay you after signed arrival, or in the retail programs, they can pay you 12 weeks after shipping. And so to apply the same principles of the old local market bull to export was just not going to be sustainable. Really, as members of the FBF, we did support, and the original process of of this bill, I think it has been mentioned, it was put before Parliament in around 2012. I was the chairman on the Fresh Produce Exporters, or member and chairman over a period, that period. With Lizelle from APAC, I also then served on the APAC board at the same time when Tommy Lundman was our chairman. And through that process, there was an enormous amount of debate, because we all recognized at the time that whilst the FPF code of conduct was working, it had no legal foundation. So if you really wanted to call on an exporter to open up their books to provide guidance on how they came to a return for the grower or the reconciliation, although it was a code of conduct, it had to then follow a legal process to enforce that. There was no statutory ability to enforce that requirement. So although it was contractually, the exporters were obliged to it, and as a result, you could follow a legal process to hold them to account in terms of the contract, there was no legal grounds to enforce that. So we supported the amendment to the bill, which was probably 5 years of many, many hours, many legal opinions. And we got to a point where one of my APAC committee meetings on a council, really everything was almost approved. The only issue outstanding was a matter of credit insurance. And, you know, it was almost at a point of that where we had said, well, let's at least get it submitted in its current format, because rather have something than nothing. Nevertheless, it was never submitted at that point. And as we say, we now sit with the bill having been presented before Parliament in the original format that it was prior to all of these engagements that took place over 5 years. The main reasons for objecting, so vociferously against implementation of this bill, because of the impact it will have on the industry, I have highlighted in my submission, but it really goes down to who qualifies as an agent. The problem is that where we keep talking about export agents, the industry has changed so significantly, even since the discussions of 2012 to 2017, to the point that where we now have largely growers who were producers and had their own pack houses, they have started exporting on their own. They make use of doing their own exporting into direct programs, but they use a variety of other export agents into specific markets. Certain export agents have become specialists in specific markets. They have also gone on to start no longer with, so it's no longer just the export agent that now qualifies as an exporter. It would now be that producer. But what complicates it is that producer has now grown to a point where, because they've got their programs, they are now taking in fruit from farmers surrounding them, and they are now packing fruit for other growers and then marketing their fruit and providing other growers' fruit to other export agents. Thereby, they also are now actually agents as producers. This can even go back further into, I know, pack houses where they do not own their own produce, but they've established pack houses to consolidate fruit from growers who don't have access, and they then do the marketing and distribution. Our worry is in the new definitions of an agent, it will be so all-encompassing that literally anyone handling third-party fruit in the entire chain will qualify, and there will simply not be the capacity to monitor them in terms of the act. The other item is producer trust accounts and the laws of agency. The laws of agency provide that it's simple. Where you export a producer's fruit into a retail program and his fruit sells for a specific...
5 minutes remaining.
Thank you. And they export into a specific program, it's very easy to account sale back from that sale. But many instances we have situations where we have to go to a market like the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Jebel Ali, Abu Dhabi, Kuwait, and you have got fruit going to all of those, and the returns from each of those can differ by $4 or $5 depending on the market strength. It would then be unfair on specific growers if one grower's fruit happens to be in a container that sells for $4 less than another. So in those instances, we pool those returns on that vessel, and we provide then an average. So to then have a system of producer trust accounts where each producer is meant to have their own trust account, where you've got multiple producers in containers, it's impossible to ask customers overseas to divide up their payments for all their sales and make separate payments into every single producer's account in a container. Fidelity funds, I think we've spoken to it. My take is that is a cost that will be charged to those who actually are committed to sustainable relationships, because those who are doing good business, good growers with good exporters with sustainable relationships will have to pay for, again, those elements who take chances in where they marketing their fruit, how they're marketing, what the quality is, and actually it'll become a cost for the greater community of exporters, for those who actually are marginal. And then marine and credit insurance, I think we've talked about this again. There are a large number of countries that you will not have access to. I'd say Africa takes the majority of South African apples. You cannot get credit insurance in Africa. Russia, China, Saudi Arabia, Malaysia, any of the Far East countries. And those are many of the countries on which the industry has been built. Those are the new markets, the new developing markets, where you can't get credit insurance. Those are where exporters have over the years started relationships with a customer with a small number of containers, and the customer's paid, and they've grown the business into a sustainable system where they're comfortable that they get paid and that they are able to pay the grower. The reality is if they as an exporter do not pay the grower, their commercial reputation will be entirely at risk, and they won't be able to export going forward. The industry is too small, and as a business, professional industry, if You don't pay someone, everyone knows, and no one's going to use you to export. So we are all intrinsically linked in ensuring the success of the industry. My final and last comment is that the industry has developed to a point where we may be called exporters, but there are many companies based in Holland, Australia, South America, that are now doing exactly what we do. They have foreign offices. San Miguel is an example, an Argentinian company. They've set up offices. You set up in a position where there are many companies that are now international companies buying fruit directly from growers. They are not going to be subject to the same cost constraints that will come in with these fidelity funds, credit insurances, audits, etc. And it'll mean that the exporters out of South Africa will lose their international competitiveness, and therefore actually the business that's being done by local companies will become done by international. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Mark Jensen, for your presentation on South African food promoters. Honorable members, there are the two presentations having been put to us by the Agricultural Business Chamber, which was done by Annelise Crosby, and one from South African food promoters from Dr. Mark Jensen. I will now open the floor for questions of clarity or comments and ask our presenters to note the questions, and then we'll give them an opportunity for responses. Honorable Klappe, you may proceed. Honorable Klappe. Honorable Ntate Klappe.
Thank you, Chair. And thanks for the two presentations. But to save our time, I'm going to just go straight to my question of clarity, mainly on the issue of the period of subscription. I think they are just asking for some clarity because I thought the shortening of the period of subscription was meant to fast track the processes that would be going on. But if then this presents a negative impact on the subscription when it's reduced, can I just get clarity on that one? That is it a disadvantage for the subscription when it is reduced, and how? And the next question there for me would be just a clarity again on the meaning and essence of over-regulation in this case. What is meant by, what is referred to as over-regulation, specified in this case by the presenter, which is, I think it was, is it Annelise Crosby? I'm not sure, doesn't matter. But now it's just a clarity clear from that part. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Papa, Honorable Mamu Baba.
Thank you, Chair. I have no questions for these two presenters. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mbabama. The Honorable Ntate Matiase. Ntate Matiase.
Well, thanks, Honorable Chair. Well, I think the more we get more presenters on this subject, the more clarity is gained about the industry, and it would enrich our discussions as would be consolidating our final inputs and comments in the broader discussions of the bill, Honourable Chair. I don't really have a specific question to the presenter. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ndate Matias. Honourable Memato. Memato.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much. I am covered. I don't have any question for the two presenters, really. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Memato. Akbare Priet, may I proceed?
Thank you, Chairperson. I am also covered.
Covered. Thank you. And I visit.
Thank you, Chairperson. As well covered, I don't have a question or comment.
Thank you, Honorable Ndabezi. The Honorable Ntate. Ntate Masipa, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The last time you caught me not ready, but this time I think I'm ready. Chair, let me say thank you to the presenters. I have got a question maybe of clarity, not really a clarity, but just an understanding of the work that has been done by ACBIS. With regards from an industry perspective, what will this bill cost the industry if it goes ahead as it is at the moment? As I understand, they represent obviously the whole industry. The other question that I just want to know, and maybe they can assist me, this bill is primarily for the producers, agents, but obviously in the wine industry is a finished product that we export. I just want to know if this bill obviously also cover the, you know, the finished product like the wine they exported as such. The last question to SA Fruit Promoters. Look, there is quite an emphasis that this bill was rejected previously. The question that I have is, what is the thoughts, why would the department want to proceed with this, the bill that as is, because it was presented like this and was rejected by industry. What do you think is the thinking behind you know, coming up again with this particular bill, just for my own understanding. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Dr. Masipa. Honourable Tshwete. No, Tshwete is upset today. Honourable Tapia, are you back on the platform? Any other honourable member who may wish to pose a question?
Sorry, Chair.
Yes.
Chair, sorry, I just forget the economic and the legal implication to ACBIS. Sorry, I just said the financial, but I just wanted to hear about the legal implications as such.
Thank you, Dr. Masipa. Is there any other honourable member on the platform who may wish to pose a question? If not, honourable members, we will then go back to our presenters, starting with the agribusiness chamber. There has not been many questions, Metros, be coming up from honourable members who seem to have been covered by your presentation. But can you attend to the questions that have been raised by Honourable Ntate Masipa? Proceed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, my CEO, Mr. Theo Boshoff, has also joined. So if I don't answer fully, you may might want to jump in just and add. But quickly on
That's
the
all right.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the subscription issue, I think it's just, you know, a point that we want to make. If you want to institute a claim, there are lots of preparation required for that to get the information that you need to submit the claim. And the period that the bill allows for that is quite a short period of time. If you are unable to do so within that period of time, then you may not have a claim at all. You may lose the right to claim. So it is safer to allow a longer period in line with existing legislation than shortening the period. I think that's the point that we want to make there. On the question of over-regulation, you know, I think one acknowledges that there needs to be regulation. You need to protect your consumers. You need to protect your producers. But there always needs to be a balance between that protection and the impact that it has on the industry and also the cost that it brings about. So I think in doing any kind of regulation like the bill is attempting to do, it should be very clear, is there a requirement, first of all, for such regulation? Is there a problem, and is the extent of the problem such that you need to regulate? Secondly, how do you regulate then with minimum impact as not to cause that kind of unintended consequences that some of the other presenters have highlighted? And if you don't get that balance right, you might end up in a situation where you over-regulate and that then has negative unintended consequences along the line. The question on the cost to the industry, Jefferson, is not something that I can quantify, but it is clear that there will be additional costs, particularly to the export agents that have not been previously required to get insurance and have the trust funds and all of that. So that definitely will have an additional cost, and that cost, once again, is not just limited then to the agents, but it will probably have an impact throughout the value chain. I don't know if my CEO would like to add something to that, and I'm not actually sure about whether it covers the finished product or not. So that one, Chair, I'm unable to respond on. Thank you.
Please go ahead, Mr. Boshoff.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. Yes, thank you, Annalise, as well. Perhaps just quickly to supplement, I just had a look at the existing Act, not the bill. I don't believe wine would be covered under it. It's predominantly perishable products. So there's a list in Schedule 1, so it's part A, B, and C in Schedule 1, and that's typically perishable products as well as livestock products and the byproducts of that. So I don't believe wine would be covered. Regarding the cost to the industry, I think, again, I don't have a figure specifically, but one would be able to calculate that the total value of agricultural exports from South Africa, the majority of which would fall under this bill being horticultural products. I believe it's roughly 200 billion rand per year. So one can make, I mean, if one does have an estimate in terms of what the cost of insurance, of insuring that value would be, perhaps we can get that from some of the colleagues, one would be able to have a rough estimation. But I do think the opportunity costs of losing export markets would be significantly greater than that. One of the previous presenters mentioned that just in their business, they would lose roughly 30% of their market share due to inavailability of credit insurance. I mean, the 30% of 200 billion is maybe a bit of a rough figure, but you know, some more work might be required on that. But do you think it's possible to calculate it? But it would be substantive. It will probably be in the billions of rands. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Dr. Bosho. We'll move on then, honorable members, to our last responses from Mr. Jensen. Dr. Mark Jensen, are you there?
Yes, sorry. We said some very noisy people out on Mars, so to close the door quickly. Yeah, thank you. I think that some of it leads into each other. The sort of why is there so much pressure? I would say there's so much pressure because in that submission, in the bill of 2003, export agents were explicitly excluded from that. So we're currently sitting with a bill where APAC exporters are required to be members of APAC to export, but in fact there are no regulations within APAC to I suppose govern or ensure good practice whatsoever. And that's why I said, you know, the end of 2017 we got to a point where I was motivating, guys, we're not at 100% of what we want, but we're at 90%. And rather let's get 90% through and submitted, and then we can go through a process of fine-tuning the last 10%, and we sit in a position where we've got nothing. And I think that's where the pressure's coming, is that there is nothing at the moment from an APAC perspective or guidelines that are actually legislated, so they're looking for something to legislate. But, you know, the proposal would just, as we're trying to submit in its current form, would have a disastrous impact on the industry. And that leads into the question of over-regulation. You know, I think, like I say, the proof of the pudding is in the success. The industry has been successful. I would submit that probably 95 to 99% of business out there that is conducted is good business practice. You know, does one over-regulate for the 2 to 5% of an industry that are just commercially, they don't belong there because they're not commercially astute enough to understand the industry and the risks? You know, what's the cost of that? So in trying to regulate, do you have regulations for people who answer that they've won the national lottery in Nigeria? You know, there's some areas where we've got to find that balance between the two to say, right, well, the reality is good business begets good business. And if we allow good business to get on and we provide the framework, then they can go out and do what they have to do. If we start holding, as I said before, the challenges of that agency, or if you read what the legal issue of agent is, I would be in breach when I pool. I would be in breach of that act. And that would make me prosecutable. But my growers, they're aware that there are times when we have to pool. If they all pack fruit in 1 week and we can only ship it out over 3 weeks because of programs or over 3 weeks, is it fair that the guy who ships in the first week gets more than the guy in the last week or vice versa? There are times where you're talking to producers saying, guys, this is where we think the fairest outcome is going to be because there's been a change in the price between this stage and that stage, or A producer's fruit's a little bit more overripe than the next one, so you have to prioritize his sale, because if you don't sell that fruit immediately, it's going to rot and then it's going to realize nothing. So it's better for the collective that you sell his fruit first and the stronger fruit later. I mean, we are going through these commercial decisions on a day-to-day basis. And if I'm over-regulated to a point where they're saying, well, Mr. Jensen, you might have all the best intentions, but, you know, in terms of the strict laws of agency, this is what it is. You must account from exact selling price back to exact return to grower. Then I'm going to go, well, do I want to be in this industry? And so, you know, how do I get around that? Either I exit the industry or I sell to an international company that takes over the business and our growers start supplying them directly without those constraints. And I think that's the challenge, is finding that balance between allowing industry the capacity to grow and in some ways police itself, to commercially allow to grow, and protecting those who, as we say, are coming into the industry as new entrants, etc. And I think that's back to the question of what is the cost to the industry and the country. What's more important? We've run the numbers. Our numbers to non-insurable markets is 32%. So it's probably, like we say, it's across everyone. If you look at exporters at market globally, it is in that range of 30 to 40%. I'm involved in a company in Cape Town called Kalos. They are almost the entire market is Africa and Far East, so they would basically have to shut down. So, the cost, not just the cost of the extra administration, the cost is a cost to the country, the cost to the jobs, because if you suddenly are taking away an income stream from the 30% of your product or 30-35% of your product that's going to markets and that's contributing to help cover your base overhead costs on the farm, if you take that away, many, many, many of those farms, which are already, if you see the headlines on the South African table grape industry in crisis at the moment because it's their sustainability is in question with the increased freight rates, we have a huge risk of having a massive, massive impact on the industry as a whole. And it may be well intended to protect the small grower, but how important is that in the bigger scheme of the commercial realities of a global world? That is, to me, the big question. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Jensen. Honorable members, let us thank Annelise Crosby and Tate Boshoff for their presentation and responses on agribusiness chamber, as well as appreciate the input and the responses from the South African food promoters by Tate Jensen. We will now move on, honorable members, to take a presentation from IMASA National, as well as a submission from Fleet Central Bosford. Let me then invite Mayor Teresa Patrick to proceed with the presentation of IMASA National. Please go ahead.
Good day, sir. Can you see me? My mic is on. Yes, we can hear and see you, ma'am. Okay, good day. Good day, honourable members, as well as ladies and gents. Firstly, we as IMASA would like to thank you for giving us this opportunity to give our input on the new APAC bill. Let me introduce myself. My name is Teresa Fredericks. I am presently the Vice President of IMASA South Africa. Firstly, I would like to go through the role of the market agents in our fresh produce markets. Okay, IMASA stands for the Institute of Market Agents of South Africa. So we are a national body. IMASA is a voluntary institution of market agents in the fresh produce industry. As you can see, we were established in 1945, and in this year we are now at 77 years. Our main features are we a Section 21 association, which is a non-profit organization. Our membership is voluntary. Members of our organization is from market agencies as well as individual market agents. It represents its members on various organizations such as APAC and others in the fresh produce sector. It represents members with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries as well as all official bodies and organized agriculture. IMASA is the spokesperson for market agents in South Africa. Our objectives are we exist solely because of for its members who determine its direction, actions, and position. to work proactively on matters of interest to all of our members, to provide a communication forum for all participants in the marketing of fresh produce, to represent its members with government and other institutions, and to upgrade the standards of its members in terms of ethics, knowledge, and professionalism. The importance of fresh produce markets in the food security. We have millions of people from all over South Africa and Africa that rely on fresh produce markets for affordable food. I hope and I know lots of you have visited the fresh produce markets, and you would have seen that we have from very small buyers to large buyers, small farmers to commercial farmers that use the fresh produce market. Comments on regarding the new APAC bill?
Excuse me, Mrs. Fredericks.
Yes?
Your presentation is not moving with the slides. From our side, I just see the first slide only. So your presentation is not moving.
Okay, can you just give me 1 minute, please? Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Sorry, ma'am. We have shared it from our side. Could you please allow us to share it from your side?
I think the secretariat will have to assist with that.
Thank you.
Can you stop sharing, Ms. Frederick?
Okay, please.
Not audible, can you proceed?
Okay. Are you able to see now? Are we sharing the screen?
No.
Not yet. There's no presentation that is being shared. And we ask the secretariat and the IT to assist in enabling the team to share their documents.
We're just checking from our side as well. Are you able to view that now?
Yes.
Yes, it looks like you'll have to keep clicking on the slide so we can see which slide you're on.
Okay. Are you all good? Can what I have covered, we find we can continue going forward?
Yes, ma'am. You seem to be muted
now. Ma'am, you're muted.
Okay, sorry about that. So the last screen that we shared was the importance of markets in the food security. So I will continue from here. I'm just trying to go to the next screen. Sorry about that. Okay, so our comments on the new APAC bill, we have submitted in writing our comments on the various sections of the bill, and we would like to cover one specific section of the bill, the new APAC bill, that is of great concern to us as IBASA, and that is 17A1. The insurance by export agents and fresh produce agents. we as the market fresh produce agents, we feel that if we to provide insurance from our side, it's like the previous speaker of Agbiz has said, it's duplicating the insurance cover. The reason for us saying this is that we have trust accounts that gets audited by APAC on a monthly basis, as well that we are actually our stock on our floors are actually counted on a regular basis by APAC, and they are very precise about that. Another reason is that the market generates an income of 5% on a monthly basis for the facility and possible losses for any of our produce or the farmer's produce. And we feel that the market is our landlord and they have to take responsibility for these losses. Then we just want to go on to say that the other reasons that we feel that this is duplicated is that we as market agents, we have been, just give me a minute, please, I see my con change. Sorry about that. Some technical fault. Sorry, we just try and fix it. We constantly change the slide.
Ma'am, maybe try the arrows on your keypad or on your keyboard, or just press enter. That ought to move it forward.
Okay, let's see.
Not that button.
Okay, does it work? Okay, thank you. So we on the slide now to give you the reasons why we feel that as market agents, we will not be in favor of having an insurance. We as the fish produce market agents have been contributing to the Fidelity Fund of APAC for the past 30 years. This Fidelity Fund has strengthened over the past years because we are eradicate the reason for claims by having APAC on a regular basis doing audits as well as stock counts on our floors. The fresh produce agents have to furnish bank guarantees, and these bank guarantees are actually reviewed yearly and is based on our previous years of turnover. Fresh produce agents never own the product, so the product always belongs to the farmer, and we only manage it on consignment. So we sell the fresh produce product on behalf of the farmers. Fresh produce agents do have insurance for products in our own private cold rooms in case of loss due to equipment failure, for which producers pay a storage fee. Insurance of product challenges. All stock prices are varied based on supply and demand and quality. So these prices can change on an hourly basis based on supply and demand. And also our volumes can vary. We can have, the farmers can send big loads on one day and the next day we can have no produce. Will we be able to do exact calculation of the value of the produce that has been sent to us? I just want to make sure to understand that we get produce on a daily basis, and a at no point do we know exactly the amount of produce or the amount of buyers that we're going to have on the market. So to do a calculation of at any point at what is the value of produce on our floors, it's very difficult. And for that reason, the insurance companies will not be able or are very reluctant to cover us as far as that is concerned. We as the agencies do have insurance cover for any theft or deterioration of stock on our floors. So we are covered in that way. However, we do feel as far as the market is concerned, they should be covered for all the others because we use their facilities, like the cold rooms, the ripening rooms, and the farmers pay a fee for these facilities. So we feel that the insurance cover should be fully covered from the market side. Further to that, we would also like to have that there should be 3 fidelity funds to reduce the risk in sectors. We should have an exporters fidelity fund, a livestock fidelity fund, and we have the fresh produce fidelity fund, as I've mentioned. We have that running for the past 30 years, and it has strengthened in time. Our suggestion comment for changes. We are saying that, again, we're going back to the insurance, that we are covered through the fidelity fund, and we feel that this is sufficient. And the industry changes, you can see that we, as the fish produce markets, there are lots of movement around the markets. So the volume of growth on the national markets are not increasing. And there are some figures for you to see over the years. We're running into the negatives of volumes sent to the markets. Additional comments we would like to make. The relationship between the Act and rules. We feel, as IMASA, we feel that the rules have to be redrafted to fit the new changes in the APAC Bill, and this is also subject to public and industry participation. We feel that the training of that we, when we say training, we're referring to the staff or the salespersons on the market should resort under rules, and training is also recoverable, the fee that we pay to APAC. And that is recoverable from your various seaters. And then also we would like to just make note that, and this is not part of the bill, but we would just like to make the comment that export agents wanting to participate in local markets and off markets should be registered under APAC and should fall under the same rules like we as market agents that contribute to the fidelity fund. And that's my presentation. Thank you, ladies, gents, your honourable members.
Thank you, Mayor Teresa Fredericks, for your presentation of IMASA National. Honourable members, we'll take the next presentation, which is a submission from Place Central Bosfort. It will be done by Ntate Foser. Ntate Foser, you may proceed.
Good morning, everybody, Chairperson and members of the committee. I'm Johan Foser, MD of Place Central Bosfort, who is one of the 9 entities in the Vlei Central Group. And all our agents are registered with APAC. And in the Vlei Central Group, we mainly operate as agents at auctions, but also as in direct sales. I am also currently the chairman of SAFLA, the South African Federation of Livestock Agents and Auctioneers. SAFLA has got a membership of 47 members currently, and the members are represented on different forums, being the Red Meat Industry Forum, the National and Provincial Animal Health Forums, the national and provincial staff health forums, the livestock welfare coordinating committee, and the FMD task team. We do represent our members. We also have a very good relationship with organized agricultural entities like AgriSA, the TAUSA, the RPO, and NERPO. SAFLA did partake and gave inputs to APEC during meetings, and most of the inputs were attended to by APEC. And due to that, I've only got three comments actually to make on the current proposal. The first comment being in section one, the definition of agent. We noticed that there is a deletion of the phrase purchases or in the definition for an agent, it's instruction of on or behalf of a person purchase or sells agricultural produce. We feel that the phrase purchases or should not be deleted, because they are agents on behalf of buyers and other institutes. And if it's only looked in the instance of sells agricultural produce on behalf of the seller, if you don't include that, the people buying on behalf of, then the protection to the seller, or in actual words, the producers, we feel that that protection is then lost. The second comment that we have is currently the Schedule 1 to the bill only refers to fresh produce agents in Part A and livestock agents in Part B, and all the comments made by the other presenters regarding export agents are not captured in those headings. The livestock agents that do export of livestock on behalf of the clients, the producers, we feel that they are covered in the Schedule 1 Part D section of the bill. Our last comment is something that we just noticed in previous meetings and participation that we had comments that ostriches and game should be added to Part B, so that agents acting on behalf of producers of ostriches or game that is in game farming, not games that played on the field, but that those products, live game and ostriches, or the byproducts, as in Part C of Schedule 1, should also be listed in the schedule. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Foster, for the presentation of Place Central, both of honorable members. With your indulgence, maybe let's also take our last presentation, which is from Adnes Hutt and Meloni, which is AAM Livestock Agents and Auctioneers. We have Ms. Karen Meloni. Are you on the platform? Ms. Karen Meloni?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. You can make your submission, and then honorable members will take all the questions of the pre-presentation after Mrs. Maloney has done her presentation. Please proceed.
Good morning, honorable chair and members of the portfolio committee. I wonder if you would allow me to share my screen.
We ask the Secretariat and IT to assist Mrs. Maloney in loading the presentation.
Yes, you can, Mr.
Can everybody see that screen?
Yes, we can see the presentation. You may proceed.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, my name is Karen Maloney, and I'm representing AAM, Livestock Agents and Auctioneers. AAM's core business is conducting cattle auctions throughout KZN. Just from the get-go, AAM supports APAC and believes that it plays a vital role in protecting our industry. Its role in keeping auctions open during the recent foot and mouth disease outbreak is a case in point. However, this bill increases costs and the administration burden for agents unnecessarily, which we believe potentially threatens the existence of functional livestock auctions. Oopsie. Where I'm not able to move to my next screen here. The bill should aim to enhance ethical and economic business practices, protect the crucial marketing platforms available to farmers, ensure fair market access to all farmers, and ensure equal access to markets for all buyers, irrespective of size. In its current form, the bill burdens auctioneers or agents with excessive and unnecessary red tape and costs, threatening the economic survival of auctioneers, which impacts most significantly on small-scale farmers, who due to their size have limited market access and depend on the existence of successful auction platforms to achieve fair market prices for their livestock. It also impacts entrepreneurs entering the industry as buyers who depend on the fair auction platform to allow for buying in limited quantities and growing in their size with their individual business growth. I'm going to share the screen with you. Just give you an idea of what we feel is important in our business. At the center of our business is the livestock auction and the general auction commission charge to sellers is 5%. The suppliers to these livestock auctions are commercial farmers and the small scale or emerging farmers. We go back to commercial farmers. The commercial farmers have options. They can either sell direct to a feed lot or abattoir where they'll pay 0% commission, or they can supply feedlots and abattoirs via marketing agents. And their third option is to bring cattle to the auctions. Now, our job is to try and attract commercial farmers to bring their cattle to the livestock auctions. The commercial farmers entering cattle onto the livestock auctions enables us to market those auctions to the buyers, the feedlots, the abattoirs, and traders. If we know what the entries are, which the commercial farmers generally, you know, plan in advance and submit, you know, fairly large quantities to the auction, that enables us to market those auctions to buyers and attracts buyers to the auction. The spin-off benefit is that the small-scale farmer who's bringing one or two cattle to the sale therefore has access to all those same buyers and exactly the same market access as the commercial farmers. We think this is critical. And, oopsie, sorry, I moved off the slide. So it's a huge, the functional auction is a hugely impactful on the small-scale farmers because that small-scale farmer doesn't have other options for marketing his cattle. We also mustn't forget the buyers. We've seen a massive increase in small buyers entering the market, buying a bucky load of cattle, maybe two cattle or three little cattle. And years down the line, those same buyers are hiring big trucks to sell their cattle, you know, to transport what they've bought from an auction. So a functional auction is critical for our industry and certainly for our business. And without commercial farmers being able to sell on our auctions, that functional auction will cease to exist. And the benefits to the small-scale farmers and buyers alike will be impacted. Now, the reason I bring this up is just to remind you that commercial farmers have options. So we cannot merely increase the cost of our commission at auctions. It will have a detrimental effect on the auctions, and they will begin to dwindle in size. So we are enormously sensitive to the costs that are contemplated by in this bill. Our recommendation is that audited financial statements, that this requirement should be removed from the bill. The company that governs the requirements for audits, independent reviews, etc., in specific detail and is not necessary to be included in this bill. The cost of an annual audit is significant. The time commitment from agents and the audit process is unproductive and should not be lightly added to this bill as a requirement for all agents. An alternative would be a letter of good standing that could be given by the agent's accountant, who could be a registered chartered accountant, and could include specific reference to the liquidity ratios of the business. Second recommendation is that all directors, members of CC or trustees, and all the marketing employees, this requirement should be removed from the bill. Currently, all our marketers are registered with APAC, but it's a huge cost. We concur with some of the previous presenters that the registration should be required for the business entity. And also, the managing director or member or trustee or chief executive officer responsible for the entity to undergo the APAC registration process and stand accountable for the employee's conduct. The current cost of APAC registration for all directors and marketing employees is prohibitive. APAC funding cannot be carried solely by agents as this is financially burdensome on these economic entities. Government should be approached for a funding allocation. Trust accounts are not required for most livestock auctioneers. In KZN, auctioneers pay sellers before collecting money from buyers, i.e. the financial risk is borne by the agent or the auctioneer. This renders the use of a trust account inappropriate. The fifth recommendation, fidelity insurance or credit insurance should not be contemplated as a requirement for livestock agents. The cost is prohibitive, and where appropriate, the agent can come to an agreement with a farmer or client to take out specific insurance to suit his or her personal appetite for risk at his or her sole discretion. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Ma'am Meloni, for the presentation on AAM livestock agents and auctioneers. I will now invite the honorable members on questions of clarity and comments. Let me take this opportunity to invite the honorable Thapa to navigate and steer this ship of questions and comments as I am boarding my flight now, but I will keep my gadget on and follow the proceedings up until such a time I have to take off. Honorable Thapa, please take over.
Thank you, Chair. And thank the presenters for these two presentations. The Chair has already indicated that we are now giving the floor to the members. Should I, without wasting time, ask Honourable Thapa to come in? If she's, Honourable Thapa is still there? Not yet. Can I ask Honorable Mbabama?
Thank you very much, Interim Chair. I think the presentations as we've received them have been very clear, and I do not have any clarity-seeking questions, nor do I have any comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mbabama. Can I go to Honorable Masipa? Honorable Masipa, I'm not sure of your seating arrangement. Where are you sitting? Honorable Masipa.
Honorable Thapa, thank you very much. My seating arrangement is correctly identified by you, Honorable Chair. Chair, I just have a question to IMASA. IMASA is obviously, you know, talking to on slide 10. There should be three fidelity funds to reduce risks in sectors. It talks about exporters fidelity fund, livestock fidelity fund, and fresh produce fidelity fund, which is already there. Just a question from my side is, obviously they were part of the discussion and listening to all the other presenters. Does this view on the exporters fidelity fund hold strong still after the presentation by other sectors that are feeling that, not the other sector, but the exporters mainly from the fresh produce? And secondly, if they can also, you know, talk to the risks that, you know, Fidelity Fund from the fresh produce have been able to cover those particular risks, and what is the amount we are talking about in terms of the current fidelity fund of the fresh produce locally? What amount are we talking about now in terms of the current balance in the fidelity fund of the fresh produce? Because we are quite aware that many of the producers are moving from going directly through the agency, they go into the market, I mean, to the wholesalers directly. If, you know, IMASA can just really maybe just clarify this for us, precisely, you know, to just understand why there is a need, strong need from their side that they should be exporters for Fidelity Fund. And I think just to reiterate again, with the potential that the fresh produce exporters might lose something like 30% if you consider the market of Bangladesh, Africa.
Thank you, Honorable Masipa. Can I go to hand over to Honorable Brecht? Honorable Brecht, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was just battling to get my knoppies there. No, Chairperson, I think Honorable Masipa and my other colleagues covered me. Just to thank the presenters for their presentations as well. Yes, and maybe just a comment from my side. I still see one or two of the issues that we identified earlier still being concurrent here with the other presenters. So I think us as a committee really need to deliberate on that. But thank you, Chairperson. That's all from me.
Thank you, Honorable. Yes, can I hand over to Honorable Matthias? He's still there. Honorable Matthias, not there. Honorable Nkosi Tabiakulu.
Thank you, Nade Klapa. I do not have any comment or question at the moment. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Macho.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm covered for now. I don't have any question for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Macho. Who else? Is there any other member who I've not mentioned to give a input or clarity question?
Thanks, Chair, Honorable Chape. Also covered, Chair, because of the similarities that are emerging from all the submissions. For now, I'm okay. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, members. Can I then hand over to the presenters? On my side, there was only one small clarity on the AMM. Mrs. Maloney, on your diagram, you have the small-scale farmers. Maybe a clarity, your arrows do not indicate that the small-scale farmers would be having anything to do with the abattoirs, as it seems as if they only, according to the, they can only do business with the auctioneers. And in this case, I would like to understand what would be the impact of this bill. Thank you. Let's go then to the first one of Imasa. No, is it? Yes, Imasa, Teresa Fred. No, I've gone there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Honorable Chairperson, in response to Honorable Masipa's questions, yes, we firmly believe that the livestock and export agencies should have a fidelity fund. Taking into consideration that we as fresh produce market agents, we've been under the Fidelity Fund for the past 30 years. And as I've mentioned in my presentation, this fund has grown from strength to strength. Just to give an example, that in 2018, APAC closed down three agencies, and this was due to theft and fraud to the value of approximately 10 million rand. And taking that into consideration, we are still standing strong with our Fidelity Fund at 50 plus minus 50 million as we speak today. So to just confirm again, we firmly believe as in Malta that as we are covered with the Fidelity Fund, it takes the risk, it minimizes risk within our industry. So it does protect the industry. So the livestock as well as export agents should be considered for the fertility fund. Thank you, sir. And that fertility fund that we're referring to should be their own fertility fund. Thus, we are saying three different fertility funds.
Thank you. I'm not sure if there's any question that was referred to Fleet Central. Was there any? I don't remember. Mr. Borsho? No, Foster. Was there any question referred to your presentation? Doesn't seem to.
No, sir, there wasn't any questions.
Okay. Then let us give the platform to Agnes Hart. Me from Maloney.
I don't know what I've done here now. I've lost you guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Your question was, do small-scale farmers have access to abattoirs on the diagram that I put up? They have access to the abattoirs via the auction platform, which is why the auction is so important to them. A small farmer really doesn't take one animal or one or two animals to an abattoir. An abattoir will buy an entire truckload and you know, at an auction. So the large farmer who has 40 or cattle, shorter animals to sell, can deal directly with the abattoir. The small-scale farmer is not prohibited from dealing with the abattoir, but practically it doesn't happen. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, so the auction platform is just really critical for that small guy because he's going to get the same price per kg for his single animal as the farmer that brings 40 slaughter oxen to the sale. And it's really, we've seen enormous growth in our numbers, in our turnover figures from small-scale farmers to the point that last year 43% of our turnover was coming from small-scale farmers, which is massive.
Thank you. Honorable Clapper, you were the last to come in. Where was your question addressed? Honorable. Or must be, you're having your hand up. Proceed.
Chair. Thanks. Chair, I just want to go back to IMASA. I don't think I was answered on the second part of the question. I think the second part of the question was really to ask IMASA the types of risks that they are talking about. And I think I also highlighted the fact that there are producers that are going directly to your Woolworths and to your Checkers that are not using the fresh produce. How has that really affected them as such? If they can get an answer on that one. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks.
If I could, Honourable Chairperson?
Yes, proceed.
Yeah, Honourable Nasibe, yes. With regards to farmers that send directly to your retailers like Woolworths, etc., those farmers are not protected under the Fidelity Fund. We're specifically talking about if farmers are only protected if they send to the fish produce markets and they are covered under them. APAC regulates those farmers. Any directs to that you're referring to are not covered under the Fidelity Fund.
Thank you. Is there any member who feels that?
Chair?
Chair has been covered.
Sorry, I think maybe I need to be just clear. I think I'm just asking about the risks that, you know, in your 30 years you have encountered, you know, that you feel strongly that needs to be covered by the Export Fidelity Fund.
Okay, to answer you on the risk, what you're asking, sir, is basically the risk that we've experienced the most, and that would be regarding theft and fraud.
And that is why AIPAC is there to regulate the salesperson, that is the person that sells on the behalf of the farmers, and as well as the market agency itself. So that we are regulated on both ways, and that is to eradicate that risk. But to answer your question, it is the highest risk is theft and fraud.
Thank you for that clarity, Ms. Frederick. Then I believe that all members have been covered, have been heard, given the space. In that case, then I believe that we have come to the conclusion of the presentations and the questions of clarity by members. And let us thank all the presenters for the good work they have done for us to make us understand all the feelings and requirements and intentions and their ideas about the about this legislation, which I believe is going to be taken care of by the department and the and parliament. And therefore, with your permission, members, can I, after as I thank the presenters, can I ask them to be excused so that we continue with the other business of the committee? Thanks.
Thank
and
you,
your excuse.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chair and members. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Secretariat, you'll indicate to me when we are in-house.
Okay.
Honorable Kapa,
yes, sir.
Still on the platform, you may deal with the set of minutes that we have, and then the other report in terms of our oversight work in PPECB as well as the Street 6. We will take the report on the next sitting of the committee. If you can just dispense of the minutes that are outstanding, I will appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Chair, for that guidance. Secretariat, you're worried. Over to you. We are on the minutes of Tuesday, the 8th of March, on page 1. Where you have the attendance register. We're on page 2 where you have your opening and welcome with attendance register and apologies, an overview. Presentation by Namak. On page 3, you have your beginning with 334, continuing, and then the presentation by department. And the response, which is questions. And comment from the committee members. You have your response by Namak. And there comes point number 4, the adjournments. Here are the minutes. Any member of the committee who moves that these minutes are the true reflection of the proceedings of that date.
Yes, Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
There's a mover for the adoption. Any seconder for the adoption of the minutes?
I will then second that for the adoption of the minutes, Chair.
I think, is it the 8th of March?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks. The minutes are therefore duly adopted. And is there anything that we feel is a matter arising from the minutes? None. The minutes are dispensed. Can you give us the next set of minutes? The next set of minutes is the 15th of March. You have your page one. Yeah, your page two with opening remarks and attendance register and summary of proceedings as in three.
Progress.
The meeting will help.
Thank you, Honorable Mandela. Can I have a seconder?
Sir, I'm here to, Patricia Mack, I'm here to second the move of the minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mandela. So therefore, our minutes are duly adopted as a true reflection of our proceedings. Is there anything that we regard as matter arising from these minutes? None. Thank you, Honorable Members. Therefore, Honorable Marshall, you have your hand up. Honorable Marshall, are you having your hand up?
Sorry, Chair, it is the... That's
for a second.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. The next set of minutes is Tuesday, the 22nd of March. Here's your first page. Attendance register. And your second page, opening attendance register, summary of proceedings. Comments and questions. There's your page three with matters of committee. And response by Jalrat. Adoption of the minutes. You have your consideration of the draft oversight to Baju with the adjournment. Any mover for the adoption of this minutes of the 22nd March?
Yes, Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 22nd of March 2022 as a true reflection of the meeting we held. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mandela. And can I have a seconder for the adoption of the minutes? That has moved.
Chair, Member, so I will second the minutes as a true reflection. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Manso. Therefore, this our minutes are duly adopted. And is there any issue that is regarded as a matter arising out of those minutes? None. Secretariat, do we have any other steps? Oh, when did it say 23rd March?
That was the last one, Chair. Thanks.
That was the last one?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity. Are you still there, Chair? You can still say your last words if you're there.
No, please go ahead, Honorable Kapa. I'm in the tunnel and it's noisy. As you can hear, the airplanes are making noise outside. So I'd rather have you conclude and give the final remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me then thank you, Honorable Members, for today's participation and contributions. And also thank all our staff for all the work that was done. That is all the staff, the personnel that were doing this job. And therefore, we feel that today's job, we have come to the conclusion and we will be informed of the next meeting where we'll be dealing with the issues that the Chair has mentioned. With those words, I thank you. Meeting stand adjourned. Bye-bye.
Thank you.